This is American Roots. I'm Nick Spitzer. With our program devoted to the musical legacy of the late jazz pianist, composer, teacher, and patriarch Ellis Marsalis Jr. and his late wife Dolores, four of their six sons play music. Trombonist Delfio Marsalis was the one also enlisted to record his brothers. He interned with Alan Toussaint at Sea Saint Studios, producing albums by Terrence Blanchard, Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and his family. Delfio wrote a children's work for the Dallas Opera in the 90s. Back home in New Orleans, he started Uptown Music Theater for young people, all continuing the music education tradition of his father. He leads the Uptown Jazz Orchestra, a 16-piece big band that brings the swing. I asked Delfio about his memories as a youth of his father on the job.
My brother Ellis and I would go to some gigs, Lou and Charlie's. You know, you'd have five, six people in the band. You might be eight or nine people in the club, you know, at the last set. And we were just like, man, what is Dad even doing here? Mm. Like, there's nobody here. So in that club, the piano was right off by the backstage area.
Oh, it's a classic place.
Yeah. So we just walked on to the stage while he's in the middle of a song. Tapped him on the shoulder. Dad, let's go. He just looked at us and said, I finished playing at midnight. That's when we leave. Said, okay, well, back downstairs to the hamburgers and the older men telling us these grown-up stories and jokes. You know, by the time I hit sixth grade, that's when I said, you know, maybe I'll pick up an instrument. Branford was playing saxophone, Wenton was playing trumpet. And I saw the trombone, and I was like, damn, nobody would want to play this, man. Let me play it. You know, it's like, this is me. Trombone really captures my personality in a number of ways. And the New Orleans setup, of course, the trumpet has to play the lead, which is one mindset. The clarinet or the saxophone has to decide if he's going to argue with or agree with the trumpet. And that's, you know, so those two instruments perfectly suited for Branford and Wenton. Now the trombone comes along and has to really have his ears on everything that's going on. So that if the trumpet and saxophone are agreeing too much, trombone can stir it up, play something a little more raucous. But then once the trumpet and saxophone really argue, trombone comes along and says, hey, bro, everything is going to be cool.
Well, it's funny, we use the labels like modern and traditional. I mean, anything that's played now is modern in the sense that it's currently happening. And on the other side, you know, there's traditions of bebop and swing and cool that have, you know, endured in their own way. And I'll just jump for a moment to your record Jazz Party. I mean, you have managed to infuse, you know, New Orleans traditional jazz, soul, funk, hip-hop, with a modernist jazz sensibility that is really incredible. I mean, it sort of lifts everything beyond genre.
I met a guy in Sweden. I had a t-shirt that had jazz on. He says, oh, I love jazz. What do you play? I said, oh, I play modern jazz. And he says, I don't like modern jazz. No. It's like he was actually kind of upset with me. It's like the way he looked at me, he's like, I only like happy jazz. Man, and he walked off, and I sat there thinking about it. Man, you know what? Before the 1950s, jazz was all in a major key. It was either major key or blues. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the 50s and the tonality that everyone loves, the Dorian, the minor, you know, the minor modes and Phrygian, and it's things that are meant to create a certain type of tension. So after 1950, no more real happy jazz other than what we would consider in an older style. And then sure enough, man, you know, 5-6 years ago, however long it was, I'm going to a gig, brother's coming down the street, and he sees me put the trombone in the car. He said, yeah, you're going to blow that horn and make some people happy, huh? And it was interesting to me because I realized that at no point when I was playing with the modern players, did we ever say, yeah, let's go make some people happy?
Right, right.
It was never that thought. So now my belief is that is our single goal, is to make the people happy. And that's it. That's the only goal. It's not a case of how much hip stuff can you play or how many Coltrane changes can you play. Make the people happy.
So it seems to me you've managed to make that work in everything you're doing. I mean, if happiness is the thing, you can be serious about it, you can dance to it, but you can also be very technical, very strong in your knowledge, your ability, your technique. So, I mean, if you can achieve that, I think that's a great
thing. Right, and that's the Roger Lewis effect. You know, Roger Lewis.
Oh, yeah, the great Barry player. Oh, yeah, and played with Fats Domino for years, and, of course, Dirty Dozen. Yeah.
Yeah, and we call him the dirty old man. But Roger has such a spirit and such a life and vitality to his music. And the challenge becomes when you're like if you're playing the brass band music in the street, you know, it's a lot of blues. The challenge becomes when you're playing what we consider more the modern sound, more of those minor tonalities. How do you have that life and spirit? Now, of course, when you listen at Coltrane, he does have that, but he's coming from Hamlet, North Carolina.
I know, little tiny town.
Yeah, the New Orleans thing is way different because he didn't grow up hearing the brass bands marching down the street. So that's the thing that we have to tap into as a New Orleans musician. I say, no matter what I play, or no matter what we play, we grew up hearing that sound, and that is etched in our minds. When we go to the swing, and that's what I always tell folks when they talk about, well, this is jazz and that ain't jazz. And I see, man, when you go to the swing, if it's not 100% real, then it's going to be tough for you to consider yourself a jazz musician. And that's just what it is. That's like a basketball player can't dribble. Yeah, but man, he can make the three-point shot. Well, you can't dribble, sorry.
He may not get open for the shot very often.
That's it, you know? So it's like, what I always tell the musicians is, this is the, you know, the deal breaker. If we can't swing, we can't consider ourselves a jazz orchestra. It's not that we have to play only Duke Ellington music, or that we have to play music from the 40s. It's not the point. We have to be able to play it.
What do you feel like you learned from your father in terms of music and just how you comport yourself?
Well, many things. The interesting thing is I find that I aspire to be more like my father now that he's gone than when he was actually here, because it makes more sense to me how great he was and the things that made him great. You know, the first thing is he never complained. So even though we had a sense that health-wise, he probably didn't have a long way to go still. The COVID-19 kind of sped up that process, but we in our minds had that made up. But he was never a complainer, so it was no way to really tell what kind of shape he was in. And he had a demeanor about him where he treated everyone the same. So it had nothing to do with class or race. You know, that's how he dealt with race and this foolishness that perpetually permeates the Deep South, that we have to constantly address one way or another. He had his own agenda, his own thing that was important. And he never allowed you to get him outside of where he wanted to be. Something like what Louis Armstrong had. I would say, you know, Louis Armstrong looked the lion of hatred in the mouth from a close range. And he said, you ain't gonna get me. And it never got him.
Well, your father commanded such incredible respect. I always thought of him as like, you know, this incredible, dignified, dedicated person, but he also reminded me a little of a coach. By setting the agenda and the tone and the expectation, a lot of students had a tremendous experience and model.
When you're on the bandstand, you really learn who someone is on the inside. So, you know, my dad was real in that respect. And he would just make comments like, man, you know, this song, I Concentrate on You, man, that's a nice tune. And that would be it. That was his way of saying, go learn this song, because it's going to teach you some things that you need to know.
What is it that keeps you doing these things in New Orleans, whether it's musical theater or the Uptown Orchestra, making your records? Why stay in New Orleans?
It's the community. It's one of the great communities, if not the greatest community in the world. You know, when you live here, you know it's just something unique, something special. And yet we have challenges, but New Orleans is the original melting pot. I mean, this is what America was supposed to be, where everyone can get together and find their place. And that's what's unique about New Orleans. And that's how the Uptown Jazz Orchestra is designed, the Uptown Music Theater, where we will accept anyone. You just have to find your place.
Delphi, I think we've covered the waterfront, the riverfront here.
Yeah.
So thanks for being with me here on American Roots.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. And until the next time.
We're going to have a jazz party all night long. We're going to have a jazz party till the break of dawn. We're going to have a jazz party all night long. You come uptown, we're gonna party till the break of dawn. We're gonna have a jazz party and have some fun. We're gonna have a jazz party till the blues is gone. We're gonna have a jazz party and have some fun. If you're feeling bad, come on and party till the blues is gone.
Delphi Marsalis and the Uptown Jazz Orchestra with singer Tanya Boyd Cannon from Jazz Party 2020. Delphi has been busy during the quarantine setting up NOMA, Keep New Orleans Music Alive, to help musicians who've lost income during the lockdown. Learn more at knoma.org. Up next, two classics from Ellis Marsalis' quintet and quartet that take us back to the late 1950s and early 60s, when he recorded for Harold Batiste's AFO Records. That means All for One. It's considered the first black-owned modern jazz label. Here's Ellis with his modern classic in 1963, joined by Nat Parolet, tenor sax, Marshall Smith, bass, and James Black, drums. Monkey Puzzle on American Roots. Thank you. Ellis Marsalis Jr. leading his quartet in mellow bop style, 1959, from the LP Gulf Coast Jazz Volume 1. The tune Three Musketeers, written by clarinetist Alvin Batiste. The ensemble also included Harold Batiste sax and Ed Blackwell drums. Produced at Cosimo Matassa's J&M Recording Studio on Rampart Street in the French Quarter. And we are back with pianist and patriarch Ellis Marsalis Jr. and his musical sons for a final act this hour when American Roots returns.